Today FM's Dermot and Dave.
A few weeks back, we spoke to Rory O'Connor. Lovely guy, very, very funny man. Rory Stories, a lot of you know him as on Facebook and YouTube and the like. About his new book, he was talking about his own struggles, including his issues around gambling. And we had a huge response from people who were either suffering from issues with gambling or who had family members or friends who were dealing with issues around it. So we've got Professor Colin O'Gara on the line. He's head of addiction services at St. John of God's Hospital and one of Ireland's leading experts in gambling addiction, to have a chat about how to recognise the problem as just that, a problem, and how to deal with it. Good morning, Colin. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're very well, thanks. Good to talk to you. Have you noticed an increase in people approaching your services since the start of lockdown?
Yeah, we definitely have. I mean, the issue of lockdown is it's caused so much stress for so many people, particularly around boredom, isolation, and a lot of stress really as well regarding the future. We had a very kind of strange situation too with sports betting, which is the most common form of gambling in Ireland. It stopped all of a sudden, and what we saw was a lot of people going online to gamble on other things, particularly online casino products and online slots. So they're generally thought to be more dangerous forms, more addictive forms of gambling. So that was a big concern to us, definitely.
So you found that people were maybe starting off putting a fiver on the Liverpool game, and then that graduated into slots or those kinds of things. Is that how it happens? People just experiment with other types of gambling?
Yeah, I mean, for a while there was definitely, you know, people with sports betting problems, there was a relief that they didn't have to, or they didn't have the opportunity. But I suppose the, you know, gambling harm is on a real spectrum, you know, going from people who have occasional difficulties, lose a bit of money, have some relationship difficulties, going all the way up to people who are, you know, completely preoccupied 24/7 and have, you know, suffered huge harm financially, socially, occupationally, and with relationships. So, you know, here in the inpatient setting, where, you know, we're used to dealing with very severe problems. So, you know, there was different problems, you know, across the different, you know, categories of problem gambler. So people who didn't gamble very, very often might have gambled a bit more. People who had severe problems then were looking for other routes to gamble with. And the lack of sports betting pushed them into more harmful forms of gambling.
And lockdown aside, in a general sense, is there an archetype? Is there someone, you know, a type of person who can get addicted to gambling? Or is it just anybody in any situation can have a trigger and then this provides some kind of an outlet?
Well, there's both options, really. I mean, classically with addiction, you can have somebody who has no genetic predisposition, doesn't have a family history, no history of traumatic experiences in their childhood, nothing, and they can have some of the worst forms of addiction. That's the kind of mystery of as to why people develop addiction in those situations. But also, you can also have a category of, you know, typically young males who are competitive, who, you know, like to beat the house, who, you know, are intelligent, sometimes highly intelligent, and they get hooked on, you know, they have a big win, or they experience, you know, big wins from gambling, a lot of financial success, and somewhere along the line, the risk processing gets distorted and they lose complete control of that situation. So again, there's different categories to it, and a big spectrum of people who can get addicted. And it's not just men, it can also be women.
Mm. Yeah,
with online stuff in particular, yeah.
Yeah, is it true women are more drawn into the sort of, the more sort of playful casino elements?
Yeah, definitely. That's what the literature suggests. And the literature also suggests that the male side of it is more, you know, competitive and beating the house and playing against other people. That's why betting exchanges are so popular. But with women, it's thought to be, the literature would suggest that it's more distraction, a pastime, a hobby, which is seemed to be beneficial. Just for enjoyment. But again, somewhere along the line, some women can get hooked there. I mean, with all addiction, you're really talking about, 70-80% of people, whether it's alcohol, drugs, gambling, will engage in the either substance taking or the process without difficulty. And then you're looking at a spectrum of harm then from then on, from people who suffer minor problems all the way up to people who need inpatient treatment, who unfortunately develop, severe mental health difficulties, and sometimes they're subjected to suicidal thoughts and sadly suicide, So again, a very wide spectrum,
If someone's listening today and they fear that they might have a problem, or that someone's listening and they think someone they know might have a problem, are there signs to look out for?
Yeah, I mean, we would see people across the spectrum. Although we're an inpatient service, we would definitely see people who are in the earlier stages of gambling as well. But one thing is in common, is generally the people around the individual tend to notice that there's a difficulty prior to the person, often prior to the person themselves realizing they have a difficulty. So, there'll be a change. Change in behavior is a big issue. Somebody showing a personality change, spending, being more solitary, spending more time on the phone, spending more time in a particular room. And then, in so many cases, it's so sad to see the family members realize only very late that the finances are in big trouble. Mm. So we would often say, if people are, suspicious that a loved one is gambling, that they look at at bank statements, have an idea, what's going on financially. Now, for people living on their own, that's obviously more difficult. But it's usually, people will have a sense that there's something not right. And if they do suspect that gambling's involved, we would urge people to get in there early and just try to address it in a non-confrontational way with people, to try and, take a supportive approach rather than, jumping in there too confrontationally, because that tends not to help.
Yeah, that's one of the questions we got asked a lot. It was, how do you approach someone who is gambling in secret, without them exploding? Or are you just feeling like you're walking on landmines? What's the best way around that?
Well, our services, I'm doing this role long enough to know that, approaching anybody who's in the throes of an addiction in a confrontational way generally doesn't work. It just makes the problem more difficult, and the individual who's ill will dig their heels in and become more defended. So really, it's trying to approach the problem with deft hands and just as gentle as possible, particularly in the early stages. Now, I'm sure a lot of your listeners will be aware that, they'll have tried that and it doesn't work. So, you do at some stage have to, up the ante somewhat, but certainly starting from as supportive an approach as possible is definitely the way to go.
And when someone gets to your services in John of God's, obviously, it has been recognized as a problem at that point. What are the steps in the treatment like?
Yeah, so the major thing I'd be looking at when I meet somebody for the first time would be whether they need to come into hospital or not, whether there are risk issues there, whether there's a mood problem, psychiatric difficulties. In a lot of cases, somebody can be treated as an outpatient, and that would entail linking people in with mutual support, which would be Gamblers Anonymous in this case, which is a fantastic support. Now, not everybody wants to do that. So in that case, we would channel people towards one-to-one counselling. And, one-to-one counsellors, Gamblers Anonymous, or any support service really will be highlighting, debt control, debt management, making sure that the person is, for a while, relieved of the obligations of holding cash. Cash
yeah.
is a big, big problem with regards to gambling and, you don't have to go for a full perfect in it either. If you restrict the damage in gambling, at the end of the day, the drug here is money, and you know the damages caused by taking that drug on an ongoing basis. So we would enlist a family member to help with the management of cash. And really, if you can minimize that down to, you know, 5, 10, 15 euro a day, obviously it doesn't feel great for the person to have to do that. But if you do that, you minimize the amount of cash that is going out. And that can have a huge healing effect over time.
Okay, this...
Similarly, sorry.
No, go ahead. No, you go ahead, Colin.
Yeah, just the GA, I mean, so many people as well tell us that, you know, it's religious, it is cliquey, the meetings are depressing, that people don't want to go in and hear so-called war stories and that. But I've worked with so many people that have initially been very, very against the fellowship, but have gained a huge benefit from it. And that goes across Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, and Gamblers Anonymous. It is, you know, a huge network. No cost associated with it, no need for referrals from professionals, you just show up yourself. So that is a massive, massive support. And there are, you know, I've mentioned as well, Problem Gambling Ireland, which is now Extern Gambling, and people like Barry Grant and Tony O'Reilly, people like that who in Ireland who are wonderful, wonderful support. So there is help out there for people. And we tend to channel people who come for help towards these very helpful people and helpful services. So, you know, there is a lot of help out there. But unfortunately, from a national point of view and from a funding point of view, it really is very, very poor. We do not have a nationwide structure of services, and the funding going into gambling in recent years has been very poor as well. So...
If I could read out some texts that have come into you, Colin, if that's okay. Someone says, I had a bit of an issue with online and mobile games regarding microtransactions, gambling on getting the small items I wanted. It's a form of gambling that people don't realize can grip you. Have you seen an increase in that kind of stuff because of the smartphone revolution?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been international focus on that with regard to whether it actually constitutes gambling. I mean, there is no question that micro transactions, in particular loot boxes in video games, constitute gambling. And it's a multi-billion industry that the video gaming industry is failing basically to take out. So basically you have kids playing games with these little gambling features in them. Mm. And it's basically introducing kids to the concept of a random, you know, a spin of a wheel or a random gambling feature, basically, where it doesn't need to be there, but they're proving to be very lucrative, and hence we're seeing the persistence of them.
There were precursors to this. I remember being at the school fete when I was growing up in the 80s, and they had the Wheel of Fortune, you know, and I was probably about 9, and I went up and spun the wheel and I won a bottle of Blue Nun wine.
Wow.
It was always sort of a confusion around these areas about how we should treat kids. What is life without gambling like, asked somebody? Do I have to give up drinking? So, do other potentially addictive substances, do you have to basically quit everything? Does one sort of blend into the other?
Yeah, I mean, that's a brilliant question. It's something that we grapple with all the time, because we would have somebody doing very well, very successful, recovering gambling a few months down the line. So excellent early recovery. And then the issue of alcohol comes up. Can I start drinking again? You know, initially would say leave it out, but you know, there is such this concept of cross substitution. So you give up one addiction and you move on to another. It really boils down to working with a team or working with an individual one-to-one. To generalize, guys, I would say is wouldn't be appropriate, because you can't really legislate for everybody in that situation. And again, as I said earlier, there's a kind of a spectrum of harm. You know, in milder forms of gambling, you may well be able to continue drinking alcohol in a controlled fashion. But if you have a severe form of gambling disorder, Perhaps that was complicated in some way with a crossover with alcohol. It would be very unwise to drink alcohol.
Yeah.
So really it just boils down to, you know, one-to-one care planning and getting, you know, working with somebody to work out what the best approach in that situation is, you know.
Finally, if someone is listening this morning, Colin, who might be feeling a lot of guilt or shame around their behaviour, they know that something ain't right, they don't know how bad their own problem is, what's the next step for them in terms of just overcoming this shame or guilt they might be feeling about sharing the news with their family and their loved ones? What's the first step they can take?
Yeah, I mean, you know, having spoken to so many other treatment centres and so many other practitioners, counsellors, you know, across the country and abroad, I mean, I think that there's unanimous agreement that the first thing to do, and that's so important for people, is to, you know, share the problem with somebody. I mean, gambling addiction is an incredibly solitary, hidden, and vicious disease, really, when it grabs hold of people. And people will do everything to maintain that addiction, you know, to try and, you know, chasing losses is the key kind of feature of this illness. And as part of that, people will, you know, because they're so sick with this illness, they'll lie, you know, they will basically do anything to continue it. So to break that cycle, we've experienced to break that cycle, really, speaking to somebody is the most important thing by far. After that, then, once you've kind of spoke to somebody about it and shared and given somebody the responsibility to help you, generally it would be getting in contact with, say, a family doctor or GA, you know. At the moment, the GA meeting's a bit of a problem with coronavirus, but the GA website is the place to start. And I even rang that in March at the start of the pandemic, wondering what was happening with the meetings. But generally there's somebody in an office there that can give information, you know. Between family doctor and GA, sorry, yeah.
They're just saying, isn't there another website, problemgambling.ie, people can log on there for info as well?
Absolutely, yeah. That's the
brilliant.
Other one, yeah.
Look, Professor Colin O'Gara, Head of Addiction Services at St. John of God's Hospital and one of Ireland's leading experts in gambling addiction. Thanks so much for chatting to us today.
Dermot and Dave, listen live on air from 9 a.m. weekdays on Today FM.